This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Your number is 877-217-5757, and our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And here we are, almost a year and a half since the outbreak of COVID-19 in our country. And if you read USA Today, Florida breaks record in cases, hospitalizations, over 1 million vaccine doses thrown away in 10 states. People are still reluctant to get vaccinated, despite the fact that close to 700,000 Americans have died. And of course, in this region of the country, the outbreak is more severe than in others, after the vaccines became available. Mike Berto is here to talk with us about various matters, but healthcare is his business. He's with Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. The last 10 years, the chief healthcare economist. He's kind of the spokesman for the company, and also he has logged 17 years with Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. Good morning, Mike.
Oh, good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me today.
What's your perception of where we are?
Well, we've got some work to do. When I look across the board at all the different states and take a look at how their vaccine percentages compared to ours, total number of people vaccinated, we're pretty close to the bottom. I think there are only three or four states that have fewer people vaccinated as a percentage of their population as we do. Last week, I did a quick analysis. We had 37% of the population fully vaccinated. The national average was about 50%, and the leading states, places like Vermont, had 67, 68% vaccinated. So we've got some work to do there.
In the New York Times Sunday, a poll of why people are not being vaccinated, 53% of those who are not vaccinated say they're concerned about side effects. 40% waiting to see if the vaccine is safe. 37% just don't trust vaccines. 27% don't trust government. 26% say, I don't need it. And it goes on from there. But Sure. It's hard to get past these ingrained thoughts.
Yeah, you know, we've written extensively, kind of addressing those bullets one at a time about the things that would make people hesitant. The first thing I would just like to say is about 360 million doses of vaccine have been given in the U.S. already. And for when we look across the board at all the different types of vaccines, these COVID vaccines are the safest, among the safest vaccines we've ever seen. The side effect levels are imperceptible. There are some of them haven't been tracked down yet. But the reality is, from what we've seen so far, and we've got, 15 or 16 months, rather 5 or 6 months of experience so far with the vaccines, they are very safe. And it's also telling to me that when we look at the population of folks in the hospital right now and the people that are losing their lives to COVID, the vast majority of those people are unvaccinated. The hospital percentages, north of 90% of the people in the hospital are unvaccinated folks. When we look at the death rates, 1 or 2% are 98, 99% are unvaccinated folks. That kind of math is hard to argue with.
It is hard to argue with it, but people do, as we know, and I don't know how we're going to get past this. And apparently the governor has another press conference today, and we may have another mask mandate, which will be met with some resistance.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, I haven't met anyone that wants to go back to 2020, rather. I mean, just a general reminder, in May, there were 400,000 people unemployed in Louisiana. 400,000. Normally, we have 15 or 20,000 people drawing unemployment benefits. You know, our economy had essentially ground to a halt. The GDP went down 30% in two quarters. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anybody wanting to go back there. Now, one of the things I learned this morning that I found interesting was there are people waiting for full approval of the mRNA vaccines like the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Right. From the FDA. Right now, they're under what's called an emergency use authorization. What I found out this morning was the only thing holding up full FDA approval is some analysis of their shelf life. In other words, when they give them to a pharmacy and they thaw the vaccine out, how long is it effective for? There's some debate. The numbers seem to be higher than we thought. In other words, we thought they'd be good for a week or 2 weeks, and it may be more like a month or 6 weeks, and they're still effective. So it's all good news, but until they nail that down, that's the last box on the FDA checklist that has to be checked, is the efficacy of the vaccine after it sits on a shelf. But there are no safety concerns left in that analysis.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Holly in the Garden District says she knows of some people who have been vaccinated who still got COVID. Now,
absolutely.
We've had three people on our staff here at Louisiana Radio Network and Tiger Ag who have been vaccinated and got COVID. But the recovery time is a lot easier, it seems, for those who have been vaccinated. And the living testament is our producer, Matt Doyle, who was out last week after testing positive for COVID, but he's been vaccinated and he looks healthy as a horse. So I think he's okay. But if he had not been vaccinated, Matt might be in some dire straits right now.
You know, the data's pretty clear. Vaccines are not foolproof. You're not going to get 100% coverage with any vaccine. But to give you an idea, on an annual basis, the flu vaccines are typically 50 to 60% effective. And that's because influenza, that virus, mutates very rapidly in the population. Corona doesn't mutate as fast, but it's still mutating, and it needs an unvaccinated population to create new variants. You don't see mutations in people who are vaccinated. So the bigger population that are unvaccinated that catch corona, the more different variants we're going to be dealing with down the road. And so that's a very big deal.
877-217-5757 to talk with Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. I know many of us have COVID fatigue. We thought we were through the worst of it, and now we have this relapse, if you will, and it's severe. Now, it is at a time when people are moving about. You can only imagine if we had the kind of activity that we're having right now a year ago, we would have had infinitely more cases. But this is serious business, and Mike, it still could get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, absolutely. We had three big waves of COVID last year. I call them the Mardi Gras wave, the 4th of July / graduation wave, and the Halloween wave, because those seem to be the triggering, gathering events that set those waves in motion. This year, our 4th of July wave is still going on, compounded by how contagious the Delta variant is. It is extremely easy to catch. You'll hear people talk about it being chickenpox easy to catch, which is very easy. The vaccines will protect you from the most serious effects and from hospitalizations in many cases. So we've got to watch out for this, because I track hospitalizations every day. The biggest number of people we had in the hospital last year with COVID was about 2,500 people. We're going to be over 2,000 by tomorrow if we're not there already. So we are rapidly approaching the worst wave of COVID that we've had so far.
And the deaths will follow.
It takes, sadly, my friends in the medical community tell me that on average, when someone's admitted with COVID and if they are going to pass away from it, it takes between 12 and 17 days for that to happen. So we will see those numbers 2 weeks after the hospitalizations go up, the death rates begin to climb as well. We're already seeing that.
There's a quote in the New York Times story of yesterday. Troy Matarin is the gentleman from Abbeville, Louisiana, who's quoted about the rapid spread of the Delta variant through our state. He says it does not make him more interested in getting the vaccine. To the contrary, he says it is further evidence that the vaccines are a government plot. They'd have to taser me, drag me out, and give it to me while I'm unaware of it. The 50-year-old auto parts salesman described himself as a conservative. Said at the suggestion of a mandate, that's what he would have to do. He says, I wear my mask, I sanitize my hands, but I'm not getting the shot. So there we go. That kind of mentality is hard to get by.
Well, you know, I've always regarded the choice, whether to become vaccinated or not, your own medical choices are sacred to me. They are things that only you should control, that only you should be able to make a decision on. That's my personal belief. But if the data is available, then I am hoping, I am faithful that people will see the real data that we gather and know that vaccination is the best course, not only for them personally, but for them as a citizen, as a member of the state of Louisiana who doesn't want new variants popping up of this stuff, who wants to get ahead of it. And at this point in time, vaccination is literally the only tool we have to really get ahead of COVID. I would just strongly encourage people to do it. I understand if they're hesitant, there are always going to be reasons why people don't want to do it. We're going to grease the skids by making vaccination easy to get and free.
Well, the New York Times also notes that in Washington, GOP leaders like Steve Scalise, who himself didn't get vaccinated until last month, mocked public health guidance that even vaccinated people should wear masks indoors as government control. We'll talk about that and more when we return with Mike. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Mike Berto with us a while longer, the chief healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. David in Atlanta. Hi, David.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, you know, James Gill wrote in his column in the Sunday Picayune that a Louisiana medical school who wants their students vaccinated, well, guess what? Attorney General Jeff Landry is threatening to sue that medical school. Now, who knows more about the virus, a medical school or Jeff Landry?
All right. There are militant people who believe that the government should stay out of this. Jeff Landry is one of those. He's not alone. And some people believe those thoughts are contrary to getting this under control, Mike.
Yeah, you know, I did kind of on my own a little research on the legal side, and I'm not an attorney, but I did notice that in 1905, the Supreme Court had a case where a person had refused to be vaccinated in the city, I think it was San Francisco, and had been fined for not being vaccinated. And the Supreme Court in 1905 upheld the federal government and the state government's authority to insist on vaccinations in times of public emergency. And so the whole legal question is going to be a case-by-case basis. But the reality is that people just need to look at vaccination as not so much of a threat as their ability to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 and develop new mutations in the virus. That's really what I'm thinking about today. I'm thinking about the larger the population of vaccinated people is, the less opportunity the virus has to mutate into a strain where vaccines just don't work anymore. I mean, or we have to develop a completely new vaccine. Those are the kind of things public health officials are looking at right now. They're looking forward to that.
877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on with Mike Berto. Hi, Mike. Hi, Phil.
Yeah. Hi, Jim. Good morning, sir. My questions are, how has this affected your industry? And does the fact that we have accepted Medicare help in the state, is that helping? Or anyway, and I thank you, sir. Just thank you. Bye.
Sure. The best thing that we can have from a paying for healthcare perspective right now is for as biggest percentage of the population as possible to have a deep-pocketed third-party payer backing them up when they need to go get healthcare services, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, Blue Cross, private insurance, whatever, across the board. And the percentage of people covered in Louisiana right now may be the highest it's ever been. We still have 5 or 6, maybe 7% of the population who aren't covered. But right now, the health insurance industry, for example, we're seeing a wide fluctuation in claims costs. Last year, people weren't able to get a lot of their discretionary health care taken care of. Hospitals stopped doing surgeries that weren't mandatory. So a lot of that business has started back up again. And so we're seeing a jump in health care costs now because of all the pent-up demand from 2020. So we'll be watching that and managing it through the rest of the year as well.
Bill Huey writes, Mr. Berto makes an excellent point that COVID requires unvaccinated hosts to create new variants, and there are concerns that this isn't the last.
Oh, definitely. Why would it be? You know, corona is a virus. They replicate in the trillions of cells at a time among a population of hosts. Eventually, some of those replications are imperfect. The imperfect replication that survives the best is the one that's going to be prevalent. That means the easier it spreads and the more hosts it can infect, the more successful it's going to be and the bigger threat to us. It needs an unvaccinated population to create those variants.
877-217-5757. There's still time to reach Mike Berto and his time with us, the chief healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. Who would have thought, Mike, we got to an age 11 years ago with the Affordable Care Act, okay? That's step one. But now we're actually paying people to be vaccinated. And some people are taking the advantage of it, but others, they don't even want the check. And some of them would like to have that money. In fact, in that New York Times poll, it showed that that is an incentive for those. 14% said they'd do it. These are anti-vaxxers if they got $100.
I noticed that recently. You know, we've seen lotteries pop up in Ohio and in Louisiana. We're doing a lottery here as well. They've already been four or five people win $100,000 or a $100,000 scholarship. We're seeing hospitals invest that money into vaccinating everyone. At the end of the day, that may be worth it. You know, compared to the impact on our economy to have everybody vaccinated, what's it worth? $50, $100? I am not going to argue that point right now. Whatever assists people in making that decision, I think is probably okay at this point.
A $20 food coupon, 9% say of the anti-vaxxers say they would do it for a $20 food coupon, 13% for free event tickets, 12% for transportation.
Wow.
So there are some incentives that might work. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you are on with Mike Berto.
Hey, you know, I do think the vaccines are effective. I'm not so sold on wearing a mask is going to stop the virus. But I think there's a motivation behind this by the left, and that is to push their socialist agenda. They can push their eviction moratoriums. They can shut down businesses, extend unemployment.
All right. Well, stay with us, Patrick, but I understand you're now able to evict your tenants who are not paying up. So you should be buoyant about that. Instead, I hear some anger as you're on the air with us.
Because I think that they're going to pass probably an act of Congress, an unconstitutional act that will extend the eviction moratorium. I don't think, you know, Nancy Pelosi's already trying to push for it.
Well, wouldn't you want people in your houses that you rent? Wouldn't you want them vaccinated?
Yes, and I have been able to evict people for expiration of lease. I found a way around the CDC moratorium. It hadn't stopped me, but it has made things difficult for us to run our business the way we need to. And it makes things unsafe when you can't evict a tenant that's, you know, doing unsafe acts, you know, that's acting erratic, and you can't evict them.
All right. Well, should a landlord be allowed the opportunity to evict people who are not vaccinated?
Yes, because we have a right to due process. We have a right. And if you want to take our property and let someone live for free, then we need to be justly compensated by the government beforehand, not after the fact.
All right. And another listener, Mike, says, do you have a policy at Blue Cross Blue Shield for vaccinations?
We are strongly encouraging our workforce to become vaccinated. We constantly are studying how we would get people back into our offices. You know, we're largely a work-at-home company right now. And I have to say kudos to everyone who works for Blue Cross, because that transition was it was almost seamless to get everybody back online and working, even though we weren't occupying our building where we normally had 2,500 people in one place. Everybody's really done an amazing job of keeping their productivity up, working remotely.
Peachy Melanson sent this, somebody holding a card, saying, if you're wearing a mask, why would you care if I'm not? Your mask works, right? Question mark. And the response is, if you're sober, why would you care if I'm driving drunk? Your seatbelt and airbags work, right?
The debates move into areas that I don't think any of us have anticipated, really. Until a year ago, I would have never thought of vaccines as a political issue. I mean, it wouldn't have never occurred to me, really. So we're all learning. We're learning about people's motivations, and we're learning how to make sure that, you know, the burden's on us to communicate mm-hmm. to people the value of this treatment and of this preventive care. And if we don't do a good job of communicating that, that's on us. That's not on people who don't get their vaccines.
And last year, in 1 year, in the United States of America, supposedly the most sophisticated, advanced country in the world, we lost 1.5 years of expectancy in life based on COVID-19. And it hasn't gone away, folks. It's still here, and it could affect football. Maybe that's it. In order to go to a football game, you got to be vaccinated, Mike. We'll talk more with Mike Berto, 877-217-5757. We're back with more Talk Louisiana after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased you are listening to Talk Louisiana, your number, 877-217-5757. Bit more time with Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Louisiana. Jay on Corsi notes that she went to a local firearms dealer's store the other day, and there was a sign that said, no masks allowed. So guns will protect us, but masks will not, Mike. You understand that, don't you?
Yeah, I've got that. Thanks. Straightening that out for me. That does bring me kind of in a roundabout way to one of the myths about COVID. I've run across a lot of people who are extremely healthy, take good care of themselves, you know, runners, people who do a lot of really strenuous exercise on a regular basis and take a lot of pride in their physical conditioning, you know, who are telling me it's like, well, if my health won't fight off COVID, nothing will. And I'm like, dude, viruses don't work like that. You know, it doesn't know how strong you are. Now, being in good health might help you recover from it better. But there's really no way to predict how COVID is going to affect you. And being extremely healthy is not going to stop you from getting it, you know, so we need to be clear about that. The other thing I want to remind everyone is if you're in a situation right now where you don't have health insurance, either because you've been laid off or because you've been furloughed or you just haven't had insurance, there has never been a time since I've been with Blue Cross where health insurance in the individual market has been cheaper than it is right now. The federal government is pouring money onto healthcare.gov. We've got people even with six-figure incomes drawing down federal tax credits to help them pay for it. The ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act of 21, authorized billions and billions of dollars to make sure everybody could afford their health insurance. So if you haven't checked and you don't have coverage and your employer's not offering, healthcare.gov is a great place to start. If you want to talk to a human, 844-GET-BLUE. 844-GET-BLUE will get you in with a human being who is licensed and has been doing this for a long time.
And you can find out more by going to straighttalkla.com, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's push the blog on people.
That's Mike Berto's blog.
I write about it every week, about COVID, about math, about how we can't avoid the math.
Well, we're going to get to a few of you here who've been waiting patiently.
Oh, yeah.
Reed in Goodwood. Reed, please be brief. You're on with Mike Berto. Hi, Reed. Reed, you're on Talk Louisiana. All right, let's see if we can make contact with Reed. We'll try Amber in Mid-City, who went away. So, Matt, let's see if Reed is hear something on the line, but I didn't hear Reed. And by the way, it's a good idea to turn your radio down when you hear my voice asking for you, because quite often it's not in sync. There is a slight delay. So I'm sorry we lost both Amber and Reed, but Mike, these are serious times and they require serious actions, and the governor of Louisiana has met resistance, and my guess is that he will meet more resistance if he comes through today with a mask mandate of any kind.
Yeah, I'm wearing masks is no fun. Nobody likes it. I don't think anybody would choose it. But in reality, what happens is even vaccinated people, when they have a breakthrough infection, can catch COVID and give it to somebody else. So by wearing the mask, you may not just be protecting yourself. You may be protecting someone else from getting COVID because you've got a little bit of it in you.
Now, listener, Molly asks about whether it's safe to have a mask out and not have a mask outside. She says she understands the importance of wearing one indoors, but outside, are you likely to get COVID if you don't have a mask?
I don't know the answer to that. The Delta variant is still being studied. We don't know how it transmits outdoors yet. So I will tell you that I caught COVID on a golf course back in October, and it wasn't Delta. It was just a regular COVID, and I caught it from some guys I was playing golf with. I don't think I ever touched any of them. I don't even think we shook hands. So I am reluctant to make any comments about wearing masks outside at this point.
Well, it's airborne, as we know, as Donald Trump knew early on. He told Bob Woodward that before he told the rest of us. But it is a serious business, and,
yep.
and nobody wants to get it. Carol in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Carol. You're on.
Yes. About mandates, what if I want to send my child to a school where everybody wears masks? What's the choices?
What about a mask mandate at schools? Is that something that parents should keep in mind?
Well, I think that schools are going to take that very seriously. I know last year, the schools that when they would have the day where the kids came in public, you know, when they actually showed up and weren't working remotely, mm-hmm. that they wore masks, very involved in that decision making. And I think that one of the things, kids are different, but kids tend to be a little more flexible than grown-ups about such things. So if your school, if you want your kids to learn in person and they require a mask, if my kids were still school age, I would put a mask on them and send them, because I do believe the in-person learning is more effective than remote. So if I'm wearing a mask is the price of them getting together, I'd seriously consider paying it. You know, that's where I'm at.
Well, Mike, let's get you back soon. It's an issue,
oh, sure.
Unfortunately, that will not go away anytime soon. it's a deadly thing. Thank you, Mike.
I'm going to be updating Straight Talk every week on the statistics and also on my LinkedIn site. That's a personal site, Mike Berto on LinkedIn.
Right.
And you can track hospitalizations and death rates there as well.
StraightTalkLA.com, and the number you gave, 844.
Get Blue.
Get Blue. 844. Get Blue. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
And we're into August. Remember, all this started in earnest about March 1st of last year. So we're now August 2nd. So we are 17 months into this. And unfortunately, it's not gone away. And it is picking up steam rather than losing. And a lot of people have died over the course of the last year and a half, and many of them went early because of COVID. As I mentioned, a year and a half cut from the lifespan of Americans. And one of those who died just before the COVID outbreak in 2018 was one of the great athletes of any time, Billy Cannon. He was a champion shot putter, sprinter, and of course, Heisman Trophy winner from LSU. And he lived a long life. He lived to be 80 years old, but he would have been 84 had he lived a longer life. Today, his birthday, and for those who remember the great Billy Ab Cannon, as I know our next guest does, Ed Cullen, here's Jay Chevalier, who died recently, with his ballad to Billy Cannon.
Down in the South where they say you are, there's a man known as Mr. Football, Billy Cannon. You can go to the east, you can go to the west, but everywhere you go, they say he's the best. Billy Cannon, Billy Cannon, look out, there you go, Billy Cannon.
Jay Chevalier, who also gave us the ballad of Earl K. Long. Billy Cannon would have been 84 years old today when he ran 89 yards for a touchdown on Halloween night, 1959 in Tiger Stadium. Ed Cullen, who is with us, along with Jordan LaHaye, the editor of Country Roads. Ed Cullen, you were a lad of 13. Where were you on Halloween night, 1959?
I was the only person in Louisiana not in the stadium.
Everybody who was alive says they were there.
Yeah.
Smiley Anders says he almost touched Billy Cannon as he ran down the sidelines, but I believe Smiley.
Well, Smiley had plenty of chances to touch him at Estruma.
Yeah, they sat next to each other. That's right.
Smiley was a cheerleader.
And he said he cheated off Billy Cannon.
Oh, my God. Well, Cannon was smart.
He was smart. There's no doubt. He did a dumb thing years later and got convicted of counterfeiting.
Right.
1983, that tore this town apart for a little while. People were shocked.
Oh, where he had his money buried in the styrofoam ice chest was in this funky little grocery store where I used to stop for drinks on bike rides. And I used to see the Treasury guys or the FBI guys, didn't know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the place staked out. They were watching it from up the Stanford Avenue.
Yeah, they had cameras in there. They knew what was going on.
Yeah.
In fact, Steve Myers, then editor of Tiger Rag, he went in there for a sales call one day. And his brother worked for the government and sees this videotape of his brother Steve walking in. It's like, Steve, is he involved in this?
Yeah.
But he was not.
No.
But Billy Cannon was, and he did his time. And he immediately he pleaded guilty. Now, I don't think there's a jury in Baton Rouge that would have convicted him, Ed.
Probably not, or he'd have gotten a suspended sentence. Charlie DeGravel,
yes,
wrote an
excellent,
very good book about.
But he could have, I think, beaten the rap as O.J. Simpson did.
Sure.
And years later, I would write a column comparing Simpson and Cannon, the two great Heisman winners who went down, and both went down for the count at age 46 for different reasons.
Right.
And Billy didn't like it very much to be compared with O.J. Simpson. Right. And he didn't kill anybody, but I did note, perhaps I shouldn't have, but I said, Billy, you were convicted. O.J. was acquitted.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Cannon admitted it was stupid. I think I've heard interviews you'd done with him, and the way he talked to Charlie, he fessed up.
He did. He took it well, and I think there is something analogous to him and Edwin Edwards. They went to jail and accepted the system, an imperfect one, but in Billy's case, he admitted wrong. Edwin Edwards never did.
Right.
But I thought Donald Trump should have pardoned Billy Cannon before he left office. He's pardoning everybody else.
Right.
Jack Johnson, the boxer, he could have gotten a lot of brownie points in Louisiana by pardoning Billy Ab Cannon.
I don't know if you picked up on this, but Trump's presidency was an imperfect one.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so.
I think all presidencies are, but some are more imperfect than others.
Exactly.
But that's an insight, the kind of insights we heard for years on All Things Considered with Ed Cullen, who was a frequent contributor, starting with Porch Steps Baseball. But we'll be back with Ed, who writes prolifically now for Country Roads, and we have the editor, Jordan LaHaye, after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, another segment with Ed Cullen, formerly of The Advocate for three or four generations, and he was a commentator on All Things Considered for well over a decade. And he now writes, as you would expect, he's not out of the game, for other publications. And one of those that you find Ed's work every now and then is in Country Roads. And he has a remarkable story in the latest edition about shotgun houses. And we lived in a time when those were prominent. Go to New Orleans, you see lots of them. Jordan LaHaye is also with us, the editor of Country Roads. She's been with that publication for about 3 years, and she is a native of Ville Platte, and she told me her first story was about Floyd's record shop in her hometown, a historic record shop that used to advertise on KMLAY in Little Rock on Beaker Street with Clyde Clifford. But Floyd's record shop, is it still around?
It is. You can still go to Ville Platte and find Floyd's, and find mostly some of his old stuff. But Floyd's still kicking.
Well, I'm glad that it is being preserved. It's important to preserve history, and your publication does it in its own way. And Ed Cullen, what compelled you to write about shotgun houses?
Well, before I started writing for Country Roads, I was unaware that each issue is a theme. So they clued me in on that, and the theme of the August issue is design, Southern design, and some really good stories in there. There's a knocked out house on Falls River.
On the cover, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we live in a region, of course, where we have global warming, and it gets hotter and hotter. But some of us are from a time when we didn't even have air conditioning. I lived in New Orleans without air conditioning, Ed Cullen.
I lived in Alexandria without air conditioning. Did y'all? I'm sure you had air conditioning.
I've always had air conditioning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, you get used to it. It's amazing how resilient people are if they have to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are people in Baton Rouge now who don't have air conditioning.
I know. I feel well, it's worse now than it used to be. But and of course, we've gotten used to it. And when you're accustomed to something and it goes away, then you can't live without it.
Right. Right.
And but these shotgun houses, many of them didn't have air conditioning, and yet they have lasted for, in some cases, well over a century.
Yeah.
What are some of them that you find the most fascinating?
Well, I tell you, the thing I found interesting about doing the story, Jay Edwards was an anthropologist, was our primary source on this.
Been on the show, yeah.
And Jay and Petra Hendry wrote a book called Old South Baton Rouge, The Roots of Hope. And in the early part of the book, they used Sanborn maps, the old insurance maps, to show where these shotguns were. And you see them on the map represented as rectangles, small rectangles. Mm-hmm. And you look on it, and you see where old South Baton Rouge existed, roughly from South Boulevard, the river, East Boulevard, down to LSU. LSU coined this Old South Baton Rouge name. The older people who live in that part of town still call it the Bottom, and they take pride in calling it the Bottom because it was swamp. Until they drained it.
This is right outside the gates of LSU?
Tough place to. Well, a little more towards South Boulevard. But
it's not that far.
Not that. Oh, no. No, but where the bad flooding was a little bit more.
Okay.
But, yeah, so this is a really good book. Hendry does sort of the social aspects, social studies, and Jay does the anthropology.
Well, Ed's story begins this way. In a 2013 interview with Rolling Stone, John Mellencamp said that he wrote Pink Houses driving along Interstate 65 in Indianapolis, looking out on what were likely neighborhoods of shotguns. In many Louisiana cities, we have only to take a walk, ride a bicycle, or embark on a short drive to see a house designed simultaneously so old and so modern that the sight of it makes us smile. I'm talking, of course, about shotgun houses.
Yeah.
You say it thrived in New Orleans. Why?
Well, they were there in number by 1830. The design started in West Africa, went to Haiti, went to New Orleans. The people, the African people who were responsible for that design were so successful wherever they went that they were eventually kicked out because they became a threat to the powers that be. So they were there by 1830. It was just a perfect house for New Orleans because it was long and skinny. It sat in the middle of a narrow lot with room on either side so that if there were fires, and there were two disastrous fires, not too long before the arrival of the shotgun, they helped control the spread of fires. So the thought, you know, a lot of what's written and said of shotguns is kind of, you know, folklore. How it got its name is utter jive. I mean, it's not true that you could fire a gun through the house.
But Jordan, the issue is devoted to Southern architecture, and if we live here, we may not appreciate it as much as if we did not, but what makes our area so different from other parts of the world?
In this issue, one of the big features that we did was a focus on this exhibit that is currently being held in Venice at the Venice Architecture Biennale. It's celebrating Southern architecture in general in America and kind of on a global stage, which is a really big deal. And three of our Louisiana architecture firms are being featured there. So we did a big feature on this exhibition and spoke with a lot of our local architecture firms, including Emery McClure in Lafayette and a few more. I'll find them and name them so that people can know. But Alex spoke with them about, you know, the different challenges that architects face, especially here, regarding climate change, regarding dealing with equity, and then also, you know, kind of dealing with our own history and legacy of people's expectations of what Southern architecture is supposed to be. There's a lot of really cool contemporary work being done that isn't what you expect always, but is some great solutions to, you know, our increasingly warmer climate and as well as just aesthetically beautiful work being done.
You mentioned Alex. I think you're referring to Alexandra Kennan, right?
Yes, Alexandra Kennan is our arts and entertainment editor. She does a wonderful job. She's a great writer. She's also
and
a great
you're the editor, but you're flipping the pages. You can hear those pages flipping by Jordan LaHaye. She wrote a story, a South 40, showcasing the work of contemporary Southern American architects. And Beyond Shotguns, Dismantling Stereotypes of Gulf South Architecture. What are some of the stereotypes that need to be dismantled?
Well, some of them are, for instance, that Southern architecture is limited only to shotguns or to plantation houses. There's obviously so much more. These are very important parts of the the legacy, of course, but there's extending that narrative and knowing that there's more going on as well.
Well, Ed, you're a bicyclist. We know that. You've talked about it on this show. You see a lot of the city. What impresses you about Baton Rouge when you see the various neighborhoods?
Well, I think we're lucky. We're not New Orleans. We never were. There a lot of interesting old Baton Rouge is gone. A lot of downtown, the Paramount was raised. The Hart Theater was raised. There's a lot that's gone.
It's criminal that that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a listener notes that there's still an effort led by the publisher of the Business Report and 225 and In Register. Rolf McAllister Jr. wants to get rid of City Park Golf Course. Are you for that, Ed Cullen?
You want to add an hour to the show? I can see turning it into Baton Rouge's version of Central Park. At the same time, I understand it's a historic golf course. Golfers love playing it. It's a great place for young golfers to start. But, yeah, I don't agree with Rolf about much, but I agree with him.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, some people want, like, Perkins Row there. Would that be a good thing?
I think not.
No?
No.
Well, how could we turn it into Central Park?
You know, a Baton Rouge version. Just imagine.
I don't think that's what Rolf has in mind, by the way. But
I don't think Rolf wants to put condos there. But I don't know. But.
Well, Rolf is a capitalist, as is yours truly. And you know, there are probably ways to make a buck by changing it. But what would it do to the ambiance of the neighborhood?
Oh, it'd be terrible. I mean, it would be completely antithetical to what they're doing. Or saying they're going to do with dredging the lakes and putting hike bike trails around the lakes, a park, if they wanted to monkey with City Park Golf.
And the gallery is a beautiful place.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. That green space needs to be kept. Having said that, when the golf course was shut down for a long time for renovation, I and others rode our mountain bikes all over it, and it was a fabulous place to
ride. I'm sure it was. Well, thanks for sharing your story. As always, Ed Cullen, thanks for your first stop on Talk Louisiana, Jordan LaHaye. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Until tomorrow, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay safe and stay tuned.